morning, everybody. Today is Friday, February 20th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everybody. It is sunny and minus 1 degree here this morning in balmy upstate New York. Thank God it's Friday. It's been a really long week. The kids were off here, at least in portions of upstate New York. I guess the unlucky Buffalonian children, because of that entire week they got off in October with the 7 feet of snow they had, they've been trying to make up all those days. They actually, did you know they sent those kids to school during the 1 week between Christmas and New Year, and they were trying to again make it up with sending him to school this week, but it was too damn cold. They had to cancel most of the school. So, at least for my end of things, it was a vacation week. But, gotta tell ya, it is pretty dicey trying to do all this and that and keep up with everything you need to keep up with while trying to be cruise director. Like Julie on the Love Boat. Anyway, all right, guys. So it is Friday. We are at the end of week number 5 of looking at Mad Science Gone Mad. I've been paying attention to the news here the last couple days, and apparently it seems that the rest of alternative media has finally caught up with us. Yay! They must have been reading the titles, because now everywhere I look and everywhere I listen, all these alternative radio shows are about artificial intelligence and nanotechnology. We today are going to try and finish this whole subject up. Not that I didn't enjoy it, but I think that your brains deserve some rest. Here, I gotta remember, though, my brain deserves some coffee. It is not functioning quite at the moment, but I did get that French press. I figured out how to make it super, super strong, so I have cup number one where the spoon just about stands up all by itself. All right, a couple things that I want to hit on this morning. Did you guys see that there is some new outbreak brewing? Of course, it is an antibiotic-resistant bacteria. You can get it from an endoscope, they're saying. There were up to 180 cases at UCLA now, I saw. Now, hold on 1 second, because I have a treat for you, too. If I can get the setup, I think I may have gotten this configuration to play some clippies today. And, hey, there we go. There we go. So they're up to 180 cases today. I actually caught it on the news yesterday with this endoscope at UCLA. I think they were saying like gallbladder. I don't know if it was pancreas. If you guys want to, we'll listen to this. Let's see if I can get a connection. Here we go. Join the call. And maybe if we're really super lucky, we won't get any feedback. All right, now I want you to excuse the source here. I did see this on a couple different networks. Regardless of who's putting the news out. Oh, maybe I'm hearing a little bit of feedback, but we'll have to ignore it. I think it's coming. It's feeding back through the headphones. All right, ignore who the news is coming from. Because I'm not going to be able to stand this. I got to stop it. All that matters is that they are putting out a new mantra in the news. Okay, remember, it's all about propaganda. So there's a new, be afraid, be very afraid. 180 people infected with a superbug out of California. Okay, I'm going to join and play this now. So I'm going to follow it up. Here we go. Let's see if this works. Oh, please, oh, please.
All right, so a health scare on the West Coast. Doctors say that a drug-resistant superbug may be linked to the deaths of two patients at an L.A. hospital. 7 other people are infected, and now the number of patients who may have been exposed is growing. Superbugs are scary things, Will, and now it looks like this one may be a reality. What do we think?
Good morning, Martha. Well, right now we think that nearly 180 people could be infected, and that's a major concern because the superbug, commonly referred to as CRE, can kill 40 to 50% of patients once the infection spreads to a person's bloodstream. UCLA discovered the outbreak late last month while running tests on a patient. That's when they realized that a specialized endoscope, one that's inserted down the throats of about 500,000 patients every year, may have transferred the CRE bacteria from patient to patient. 179 people may have been infected between October and January at the Ronald Reagan UCLA Medical Center. While medical experts say this is a major wake-up call, Fox News medical contributor Dr. Mark Siegel points out that CRE is hard to catch.
I don't expect this to cause a widespread outbreak in the community. That would be extremely unlikely. This bacteria is not airborne, so you don't expect it to fly around. We've been talking about measles lately, how contagious that is. This is nothing on that order.
UCLA says that the patients who may have been infected have been sent home testing kits. Martha.
Wow. All right. So what do they think can be done to stop it?
Well, medical experts say that there's three things. The first is that medical equipment needs to be better sterilized, better clean. UCLA says that it did sterilize its endoscopes. Two still ended up being infected. Then medical experts say that we need to not overuse antibiotics. Superbugs are resistant to most drugs. And then the medical industry needs to create new antibiotics to be able to better fight superbugs. Just like this, Martha.
Yeah, we've been hearing about the overuse of antibiotics for a long time. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, so the next diatribe is beginning. If we remember just over the summer, I believe it was either in July or it was in September, Obama inked another executive order. And we talked about that when we first were talking about the quote-unquote Ebola outbreak. And we'll look at that in a second. But here, let me hit the story that came out of CNN that I posted yesterday about this. Now, did they just say they sent home testing kits? As they're talking about this nightmare. And that's what they titled it on CNN, Nightmare Superbug. And they're sending home testing kits. Wow, that would make me feel pretty damn safe. The term, quote-unquote, nightmare bacteria does not bode well for anyone who may get infected. That is what CDC epidemiologists call carbapenem-resistant enterobacteriae, or CRE. Yeah. Don't ignore my pronunciation, which kills up to half the patients who contract them. Family of superbugs made headlines 2 years ago when the CDC warned that it was spreading. Now they're back in the news after seven patients at a Los Angeles hospital caught CRE after a routine endoscopic treatment for bile ducts, gallbladder, or pancreas. Two of them have now died at Ronald Reagan's UCLA Medical Center on Wednesday. CRE was a contributing factor in the deaths, but the exact cause of death was not immediately disclosed, a hospital spokesman said. The medical center is contacting 179 others who had endoscopic procedures between October and January. You know, just a couple years back, I remember the big case in Las Vegas of the colonoscopies. And apparently there was a doctor there who had been reusing equipment, if that is not the most repulsive thing you have ever even pondered. But they were all at risk then for getting AIDS, because apparently, I don't know if there had actually been someone who was infected that they were aware of, or if they were just afraid because someone could have been affected and they didn't know. But one of my friends... dad's was supposed to have gone to that place, which he didn't because he didn't make his appointment, but he was supposed to have been there at that point in time during that little window when colonoscopy scandal happened in Las Vegas. This, they said that they sterilized them properly here at UCLA, but hey, we overuse antibiotics. And you know, I got to agree with them there. I mean, I think that antibiotic overuse has actually caused a lot worse things than antibiotic resistant bacteria. I mean, yeah, it has, but The worst thing that it has caused is probably the death of our digestive flora. And that's something that we never really knew much about 20, 30 years ago. But we're discovering now that without your proper digestive flora, your immune system is in the toilet. You end up with leaky gut syndrome and autoimmune diseases. And I really think, coupled with the GMO foods, that's a lot of what our issues are with these digestive problems, these health issues, these degenerative diseases that we're all getting. I think that that has a lot to do with it. But here, let's continue on. Here are some of the things you need to know about this deadly disease. Now, again, CNN is calling this a deadly disease, yet Fox is saying they just sent home test kits. Go figure. What is CRE? It is a family of bacteria usually found in hospitals and other healthcare facilities that has evolved a huge resistance to antibiotics. Now, remember, too, they have come out with now the UV sterilization robot that they're going to start using in hospitals. UV, I talked about a long time ago when we first were looking into Ebola. UV is wonderful. You can even use it to kill microbes in water. If you're in an SHTF scenario, they do have these little UV wands that you can get for under $100. I think they call them Steripens, something like that. I actually got myself one and threw it in my hit the road backpack. You know, you can also get the straws, but the pen is like a good backup. You also got to remember, too, that hospitals are where a lot of this antibiotic-resistant bacteria comes from to begin with, like MRSA. You know, so they can't go ahead and blame necessarily the overuse of antibiotics. They should be blaming these toxic environments where the stuff is allowed to survive. Now, you also got to think, too, that because we have this impending doom of antibiotic-resistant superbugs growing everywhere, oh, who's going to charge in on their white steed and save the day? Hey, all these new genetically modified nanotech medicines, and we're going to look at some of that here in a second. All right. What is CRE? It is a family of bacteria usually found in hospitals and other healthcare facilities that has evolved a huge resistance to antibiotics. CRE can be so deadly because few antibiotics work against its different variations. That's what the name carbapenem resistant means. I don't even know how to say this. It's hard. It's hard to even focus. I should have my bifocals on. Carbapenem is a class of antibiotics often used as a last resort against bad bacterial infections. And the one thing that I had heard them mention too is that it had gotten into their blood. And typically, yeah, anytime a bad infection gets into your blood, you typically end up going into some sort of sepsis, and then it's probably game over. So you probably don't want that to happen. But hey, wait, the nanobots are going to save you because, yes, a story came out about that yesterday. Not about killing bacteria, but the nanobots in your blood helping all kinds of great things. Are these formerly unknown bacteria? No, not really. They are bacteria that have just evolved. The superbug family includes the kielbasa. That's what it looks like. Klebsiella and, it's not kielbasa, Klebsiella and E. coli, which people have naturally in their intestines, but when they spread to other parts of the body, they can, oh my God, wreak havoc. Some CRE make an enzyme called Klebsiella. I like kielbasa better. Klebsiella pneumonia carbapenemase that destroys those strong antibiotics. Now, what's interesting is that that is a pneumonia. And pneumonia in July was actually added to that executive order that we talked about where they have added additional communicable I don't know if you call it a disease, but they are communicable illnesses to the potential quarantine list. Remember, pneumonia was one that they added. It says these enzymes that destroy strong antibiotics seem to be a pretty new adaptation. Researchers first discovered them in, oh, what year? 2001, the year the world started to see all the terror. That's pretty convenient. So, how can you get it? Well, you don't get it when someone sneezes on you. Phew. And if you touch an infected wound or stool, oh yes, just like Ebola, people crawling around picking up pieces of poop, then touch a vulnerable part of the body, like an open wound, you can get it. So make sure you don't touch other people's infected wounds or poops and then touch your vulnerable parts of your bodies or an open wound, and then you should be safe. That's why it doesn't spread on the street, but in the hospitals, well, where healthcare workers and others can spread by touch. Someone may forget to wash their hands after coming in contact with stool or a wound. Oh, I know, I don't want to be in that hospital. Or a procedure could be performed with a contaminated instrument like an endoscope or a surgical device. Yeah, you know, hey, one of the things I want to get back into, because this malformed protein question came up again yesterday during the show, is I want to get back into the CVJD and mad cow, bovine, spongiform encephalopathy and malformed proteins, because that was something that I think we talked about a long time ago on air. And I don't think I ever found an answer. I don't think I ever stopped to look for the answer. But I know at one point in time, for mad cow disease, aka all those other things, they had discovered that even with full sterilization and bleach and all the other crap that they poured on the surgical instruments after operating on someone who had one of those disorders, if you could even call it that, that it didn't kill the proteins, because the proteins aren't kind of actually alive. They were malformed proteins, but they could infect other people. And I know a few of you in chat, I believe it was Dale, and maybe even SLC Mike, had said that they thought that they had come up with decontamination procedures for that. So that's something I'd be very interested in, especially in light of some of the stuff that we have read now over the last week or so in regards to some of these new quote-unquote life forms that have been identified by multiple different groups now. I would like to look into that, because if you remember, Sophia Smallstrom had mentioned that Clifford Carnicorn couldn't even kill, I think that was the blood cells, actually. He couldn't kill those blood cells in a petri dish even by pouring bleach on them. Now, what does that say? You know, I'm just thinking Plum Island 2.0 here. So if somebody wants to find some information for me, if you have some time, otherwise I'll probably do it one of these evenings when I'm bored, which doesn't happen very often. But if some of you wants to find some information on whether or not the malformed proteins that cause CJD and CVJD. I don't know. Yesterday I saw it was called just CJD, but I know that there was a distinction between CJD, Krupchev's Jacobs disease, and then Krupchev's variant Jacobs disease. That's the one in the human. They did have a distinction at one point. But anyway, if you want to see, I would love to know whether or not you now can have sterilized instruments in light of all this new, you know, super bacteria that's floating around. All right, let's go back to the story. Someone may forget to wash their hands at UCLA, but CRE can also spread from other soiled invasive medical inserts like respirator tubes or catheters. Oh, how damn horrifying. Those infected are usually patients being treated for some other ailment, and these patients have underlying health conditions which may have left them more susceptible to CRE and other infections. But some researchers warn that CRE could spill over into the streets, oh my God, if they become more widespread in hospitals. Does the procedure for these patients have present had what does the procedure those patients had present a particular infection risk? No, said the American Society for Gastrointestinal Endoscopy. Well, what about the medical instruments? The procedure involves a duodenoscope, a flexible lighted tube that is threaded through the mouth, throat, and stomach and into the top of the small intestine. Right, that's called an upper GI, I believe. Its design may impede effective cleaning Now, wait a minute. How long have they been doing endoscopy? Its design may impede effective cleaning, says the U.S. Food and Drug Administration on Thursday in a safety communication. Well, wait a second. That sounds like a class action lawsuit to me. What dumbass company made an endoscope for surgical insert internal into body procedure that cannot be properly cleaned? And what agency approved such a device? This is just horrifying. It's been stuck places where you most certainly don't want to be swapping spits. And it can't be cleaned properly? Oh my. I just found the FDA warning here. I'm going to drop this in the chat. This is kind of long and we're going to run out of time if I read all this. But this is horrifying. There you go. Oh, all right, hold on. Let's pop back to the story. The device contains a hollow channel that allows the injection of contrast dye. By the way, I'm going to tell you guys something. I mentioned this before, but my very best friend's father passed away a couple years ago, and he had had a bunch of procedures done. And with those procedures, they had given him the contrast dye. And he told me many times that when he went into massive kidney failure shortly thereafter, that he was positive that it was the contrast dye that did it to him. And in the end, he ended up dying from sepsis because he had gotten an infection in his blood after all of the, dialysis. But just be aware that every time you go in for one of these procedures, they typically want to inject you with the dye, like especially for a CAT scan or something. And I mean, guys, if it's a life or death scenario and you need to go in and you're really sick, then I say, you know what? Just like anything else, you got to look at the procedure versus, you know, your illness. I would say if it's do or die and it's a necessary procedure, the contrast dye helps them see what they got to see. But if it's some sort of routine procedure, or they're sending you in to take a look at something that's, you know, maybe elective or whatever, and you have your choice, I would think twice about that contrast dye and I would do my research. Just saying. But my friend's dad was 100% certain he was healthier than a horse. I mean, this guy, he was so awesome. And after he had that last procedure and he got that dye, and he went downhill right after that, and it was horrible, and he insisted. He said he felt it. He knew when it happened, and he ended up very quickly in stage 4 kidney failure, and he blamed it on that dye. So anyway, just as a heads up, put on your thinking cap and use your brain. I wouldn't refuse it if it was life-saving and you needed it. But like I said, if it was some sort of, you know, like how dentists always want to put you into the panoramic x-ray, except that you shouldn't be getting panoramic x-rays every year. That is unnecessary. And if you read up on those panoramic x-rays, you get way more radiation than is necessary. And even many of the medical groups now are saying that, no, you should not be getting those unless you have a serious problem. It is not to pay the medical bills, okay? To be using the device and milking the insurance company. All right, so let's get back to why this endoscope was designed in a way that it cannot be properly cleaned. Since this device contains a hollow channel that allows the injection of contrast dye or the insertion of other instruments to obtain tissue samples for biopsy or treat certain abnormalities, the device also has a movable, quote-unquote, elevator mechanism at the tip, the agency said. Even meticulously cleaning the devices prior to high-level disinfection, quote, may not entirely eliminate, unquote, the risk of transmitting infection, said the FDA. Reprocessing is a detailed, multi-step process to clean, disinfect, or sterilize reusable devices. In recent medical publications and adverse events reports associate multi-drug resistant bacterial infections in patients who have undergone this procedure with reprocessed duo endoscopes, even when manufacturer reprocessing instructions were followed correctly, said the FDA. Again, man, this has sounded like a massive class action lawsuit to me. Although the complex design of duo endoscopes improves the efficiency and effectiveness, it causes challenges for cleaning and high-level disinfection. Some parts of the scopes may be extremely difficult to access, and effective cleaning of all areas of the duo endoscopes may not be possible. None of the companies the FDA identified as the duo endoscope manufacturers, oh, listen, they're all camera manufacturers, so that should make you feel real damn safe. Fujifilm, Olympus, and Pentax, what? Those are 35mm camera companies. None of them could be immediately reached for comment. Here's the next question. Do any antibiotics work against them? Well, yes, but not many. And, oh, listen to this. Some can cause kidney damage. So don't mind that you just had the contrast dye. Now we're going to give you strong antibiotics because we infected you that kill your kidneys also. But they're only part of the treatment. Caregivers also remove some bacteria by draining off the, I hope no one's eating breakfast, stop chewing, abscess. Some CRE strains have been reported that are resistant to all antibiotics. On the other hand, some people contract the bacteria without an infection ever breaking out. All right, last paragraph or two. Is there a good way to fight their spread? Well, cleanliness in all things is important. Well, I sure hope so. Like them saying that they may forget to wash their hands at the hospital after handling poop. Wash hands, sterilize instruments. Oh, yes, and the instruments that can't be sterilized properly. And if you're a patient in a hospital, remind the staff to do the same. And, oh, wait, yes, don't. Please don't share a room with an infected patient, said the CDC. Well, maybe they should be having a conversation with your insurance company that forces you to double or triple up in a room. Also, if you come down with a harsh bacterial infection after medical treatment in another country like Mexico, be sure to tell your healthcare provider about that treatment. Some CREs are more common overseas than in the United States. Also, some researchers believe that doctors should be careful not to prescribe antibiotics too quickly because the ubiquitousness of antibiotics led superbugs to develop resistance to them in the first place, according to many experts. So yes, we really don't have proof of all this, but this is what we're telling you. And I mean, it's very possible, or it could be that more virulent superbugs are just forming that don't want to work with the traditional antibiotics. And, you know, I've talked about this before, but any of these Generation 3, and I don't know if they're on Generation 4 now, but the last time I had antibiotics, it was Generation 3 antibiotics, are all kinds of, like, mutant things that I am very, very sensitive to. They made me very sick. And that last one, and I don't remember what the name of that stuff was, but oh my God, like it was like I was intoxicated. I couldn't see straight. The whole room was moving around and I was really sick. I needed to take this stuff. And so I would take it at night and then go to sleep so I wouldn't feel it. And finally, I couldn't do it anymore. And I mentioned it to my doctor and she's like, oh my God, that's a severe reaction. You could have had a stroke. You know, and remember too, those quinolones, the same family of antibiotics that they give you for like anthrax infections, those are the ones that kill your Achilles tendon. I had that as well. It took me a very long time in my left leg for my Achilles tendon to come back, and I had to do all kinds of special exercises, standing on my toes, lifting up and down, standing against a door, pushing very carefully. You know, be careful with all that shit. But like I said, it kills gut bacteria, and that's probably what my biggest concern is. So, all right, we've now talked about the C. I want to call it CRE. Is that what it was called? C-E-R, C-R-E. What is this bacteria? Hold on. CRE. Okay. this nightmare, quote unquote nightmare superbug. So what came in September, though, before this new superbug? And remember, we just had the measles mantra, so we got everyone amped up on that. Now we got to get the superbugs, because we're all going to die over this stuff, right? Oh, my God, they're going to take us over. Well, the White House signed an executive order, and I'm pretty sure that this was in September. And this story, this one's from the end of January, but it happened in September when he first inked it. But listen to this. White House wants 1.2 billion dollars. We just have so many billions sitting around stuffed under the mattress. White House wants $1.2 billion to fight antibiotic-resistant bacteria, looming superbug epidemic. Now, this story was published in January 28th of 2015. And lo and behold, on February 18th or 19th, we have a new superbug outbreak. And there were how many people? 180 that are now exposed. And holy crap, it's in all of our hospitals. But hey, guess what? The White House wants $1.2 billion. And he had an executive order making it a national initiative to begin all this great development in the labs to come up with some sort of substance to fight these superbugs. Doesn't that seem convenient? I just, when I look at this stuff, I can't even pretend to, like, believe them. The White House has called for increased investment. I mean, guys, this is a slippery palm butt slap to all these pharmaceutical companies. The whole military, medical, industrial complex that is now formed to own biological life. I mean, with the nanobots, apparently we weren't looking closely enough at superbacteria. And remember that all of this is done under the cradling eyes of DARPA as they're sprinkling money at all of these institutions under the guise of Homeland Security to protect us against bioterror. Remember that. This is just a front. Be afraid, oh my God. This procedure that millions of people have had could now put you at risk. Be afraid, because we're going to come up with a cure. The White House has called for increased investment to fight antibiotic-resistant bacteria to prevent resurgent disease once thought eradicated. Yes, like, the death-defying measles. And new superbugs that similarly gain strength thanks to the modern penchant for profligate antibiotic use. Yeah, back, I'm telling you, in the 80s, they were really bad. And I think that that's why a lot of us got sick. I think our gut bacteria, I got a video. And now that I can play videos, we're going to, I can't remember where I put it, but we're going to hit that here before the end of the show. All right, Obama will ask the U.S. Congress to nearly double the funding that combats antibiotic resistance to $1.2 billion, the White House announced on Tuesday, right before January 28th, calling the matter, this is going to be the new ISIS Ebola fruit bat of superbugs. Obama called the matter, quote, one of the most pressing public health issues facing the world today, unquote, to the tune of $1.2 billion. And guys, now we have an emergency. So if there is any experimental anything sitting waiting in the wings to be able to start getting checks for the $1.2 billion, you better believe that it's going to go to human trials. Mark my words. Problem, reaction, solution. It keeps happening over and over again like a Xerox machine. And guys, it's not even funny anymore. I can't even laugh with evil, diabolical laughter because it's ridiculous. And people just look at this and go, okay, you need to protect us from this now. I mean, I'm not saying that you couldn't die from this shit, but do you think we had anything to do with this? Because I don't think we did. We didn't overprescribe antibiotics, and we didn't use the population at large as guinea pigs to then get us to this point. We didn't let Fukushima burn almost 4 years now in triple meltdown, releasing radiation for what scientists did at the time said, hey, all this radiation dropping all over the place might actually do something to the bacteria and viruses out there and mutate them. You think that might have something to do with it? Maybe. You don't think like Plum Island and Plum Island 2 in Kansas, I don't even know if that's up and running yet, had anything to do with some of these resistant super strains, MRSA face-eating disease in New York City? I mean, I talked about that the other day. It has been around since the 80s and the early 90s. They told us don't use the payphones, flesh any diseases everywhere. But, you know, also, speaking of New York City, we just saw 2 weeks ago we had done the story on being able to map the subway system based upon the viruses and bacteria that they were finding. They could build maps on it now. And, oh, what? Oh, they could use little fractions of DNA to build taxonomy databases for barcoding. And this is all connected, absolutely 100% connected. So we're going to give $1.2 billion of taxpayer money now that isn't being spent on making sure that children have food and homes and warmth, especially when it's like 35 below up here in the Northeast in some regions. And there are people without heat. But hey, you know what? $1.2 billion to the pharmaceutical companies is how we should be spending our tax dollars. This announcement, here we go, was a follow-up to an executive order that the president signed in September, I was correct, that launched efforts against antibiotic-resistant bacteria. The proposal called for funding research into new antibiotics, increased monitoring of infection outbreaks, new resistant efforts at veterans and military hospitals, and efforts to curb antibiotic overprescription. No, what it's doing is locking down on antibiotics, so it's going to be very difficult for you to get them. But in the meantime, they're going to use their $1.2 billion in funding to research the Frankenstein science. Because you know what? You don't need to be eating mold that kills things. You need to be eating nanobots that target and kill things. Countering antibiotic resistance currently costs the American healthcare system between $21 billion and $34 billion a year, according to the Infectious Disease Society of America. Antibiotic-resistant limits our ability to perform a range of modern medical procedures from joint replacements to organ transplants, the safety of which depends upon our ability to treat bacterial infections that can arise as post-surgical complications, said the White House. Now, as a person who got very sick after a C-section because I ended up with a horrible infection for over a month, mind you, I totally get it, but hey, maybe these surgeons should remember to wash their hands after handling poop. According to the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, more than 23,000 Americans die every year from infections that can overpower top-shelf antibiotics. Now, you know, one thing I am not seeing anywhere in any of this is the mention of silver. And there are hospitals that have been using silver to kill MRSA because it does kill MRSA. Maybe they should start testing it for other things. The situation portends a dark future. If antibiotics cannot keep pace, oh my God! Or the overuse of current antibiotics is not addressed with the global spread of germ resistance to antibiotics. And this is just fear porn to the nth degree. And all I'm hearing is cha-ching, $1.2 billion more dollars for Frankenstein research. last fall. Obama's executive order established steps that the U.S. would take to combat antibiotic resistance. The order set aside $800 million in extra funding for companies to develop, develop what? New drugs, as well as another $900 million for further research. The plan also prohibits, and yes, this was the one that got that put the wording into place so farmers stop overusing antibiotics in farm animals. And I actually think that that contributes a lot more than in people, to be honest, since we're consuming it with every bit of non-organic meat. The plan also prohibits farmers from applying antibiotics on livestock for growth purposes, but critics say it does not go nearly as far as it needs to. And by the way, I had found another story that, scarily enough, was from 2008, so I'm sure it is already way in production, but it was a professor doing research on farm animals talking about them putting nanotechnology into the chicken food to try to help the chickens combat bacteria and viruses. Isn't that nice? And they didn't say what the nanotech was. I was almost thinking it was probably nano-sized silver particulates, but who knows? In December, a study known as the Review into Antimicrobial Resistance warned that superbugs with a high resistance to antibiotics could kill 10 million people worldwide each year by 2050 unless more action is taken. The figure is higher with the global impact of cancer, which currently kills 8.2 million. Microbial resistance will impact poor nations the most, the study confirmed. In 2011, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration confirmed that 80% of all antibiotics used in the United States are dedicated to animal agriculture. And with livestock consuming the vast majority of antibiotics, the bacteria found inside the animals gradually develop resistance against the drugs when they are not administered in strong enough doses, meaning that they become much harder to treat in humans if and when that bacteria is transferred. 1.2 billion dollars. So again, like I said, CRE just popping onto the scene, 180 people that could have been infected. Holy crap, the nightmare superbug that's going to take us all out has finally arrived. Yeah, makes a lot of sense. Now, some of the things I really wanted to hop onto today, I found that original story on epigenetics, and damn, 1 hour is just not enough, but for now it's got to be. Here we go. We are going to check out, what page is this on? We are going to check out this new super nano drone in your blood. Let me see if I can find it, because I see it on my one computer, but not my other. Here we go. All right, let's see if we can connect here. Remember, I am not in my studio, so makes it a little more difficult. But hey, only took 2 days. All right, here we go from RT, nano drones, which I'd say these are more nanobots, but nano drones being perfected against heart disease. What? Yes. Good old Benny Swan.
Well, finally, before we go, we spent a lot of time on the show discussing drones. We obviously have today, but would you believe that teeny tiny microscopic drones could be used inside of your body to prevent heart attacks? Researchers have completed the first successful test of nanoparticles, which are targeted to go where they are needed in mice, and hope to soon conduct the first patient trials. These nanoparticles are designed to latch onto hard plaques in the arteries made from fat, cholesterol, and calcium, which cause heart disease. Once they reach their target, the little drones release a drug derived from a natural protein that repairs inflammation damage in the body. Each of the tiny particles, made from a plastic-like material, is 1,000 times smaller than the tip of a human hair.
that was the end of that. Hold on. Did you hear what he was saying, though? They could be dispatched in the body. They could target... Oops. They could target the plaques in your arteries. And hey, you know what? Didn't he say that it came from mice? They used some proteins out of mice? Well, here's the next thing. So I dropped that into chat. That's from last night's uploads on pigmindnews.com. Nano drones being perfected against heart disease. But wait, there's more. Let me find it. Here we go. Human DNA enlarges mouse brains. Now, you know, one of the other things, too, when we had looked at the, and that procedure, by the way, that Ben Swan was just talking about is going to be tested very soon on humans. He said, yes, I'm telling you, the nanobots are coming. They are going to start injecting people. And now that we're more used to this Frankenscience medicine, people will be more apt to line up if they promise them the fountain of youth, the cure for cancer, the cure for heart disease. Oh, my God. Line up and get your shots. All right. We are now making Shamira's, and we were. I mean, I don't know if we were, but I know in the UK they had found quite a number of Petri dishes with human-animal mixtures in them growing. This is from February 19th, yesterday. Human DNA enlarges mouse brains. Oh, yes, it does. Researchers have increased the size of mouse brains by giving the rodents a piece of human DNA that controls gene activity. The work provides some of the strongest genetic evidence yet for how the human intellect surpassed those of all other apes. The DNA could easily be a huge component in how the human brain expanded. It opens up a whole new world of possibilities about brain evolution. Remember the Brain Project? You know, how much money was dedicated to that Brain Project? Because I thought it was somewhere right around $1.2 billion as well. Be the Brain Project. I don't know. Billion seems to be a nice round number for them. The Brain Project. It's a 10-year scientific research project, but it does not say how much money. Let's see. Hold on. Federal funding. USA Today. Washington Post. 2013, 100 million. Maybe it was 100 million. Maybe it was a billion. Maybe that was DARPA that got the $1 billion. I don't know, but we're going to hop onto the Brain Project, I think, next week when we start looking at CVJD, Mad Cow, connection to Alzheimer's. There's all kinds of new stuff that's come out about that. All right, anyway, I digress. For centuries, biologists have wondered what made humans human. Once the human and chimp genomes were deciphered about a decade ago, they realized they could now begin to pinpoint the molecular underpinnings of our big brain, bipedalism, varied diet, and other traits that have made our species so successful. And here, when I see this, though, it really gets me scared because in all this transhumanism crap and these robo-whatever that they're building, one of the things they keep saying over and over and over again is that they've discovered that by mimicking nature, they've been able to make the best creatures. So yeah, let's make sure we understand all these things that make humans tick to the nth degree so when we go to build our robo-sapiens, we can. Oh, by 2008, almost two dozen computerized comparisons of human and ape genomes had come up with hundreds of pieces of DNA that might be important, but rarely have researchers taken the next step to try to prove that a piece of DNA really made a difference in human evolution. You could imagine their roles, quote, but they were just sort of so stories, says Greg Way, an evolutionary biologist at Duke University. Ray is particularly interested in DNA segments that are called enhancers, oh, I'm sure he is, which control the activity of genes nearby. He and Duke graduate student Lomax Boyd scan the genomic databases, ding, 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 and comb the scientific literature for enhancers that were different between humans and chimps and that were near genes that play a role in the brain. Now, if we back up and start looking at the 2045 Brain Project, putting the brains into robots and then uploading consciousness and memories into the machine, you will see why. You see why this is important. This stuff is just, they try to paint this like it's all innocent, like they're doing it for our benefit, but I can see through it all. When I read this, that's all I hear. Yes, we're working on trying to find out exactly what makes our brains so much bigger and better. So when we migrate, we can become super brained. We can become gods. I mean, we know that that's what they're doing. And morally and ethically speaking, we don't deserve to be gods. These people have no line that they're drawing. I mean, what kind of a line have you drawn when you've inserted human DNA into a mouse to see how big its brain gets? Out of more than 100 candidates, they and Duke developmental neurobiologist Deborah Silver tested a half dozen. They first inserted each enhancer into an embryonic mouse cell to learn whether it really did turn genes on. Then for HER5, the most active enhancer in the area of the brain called the cortex, they made mini genes containing either chimp or human versions of the enhancer linked to a quote-unquote reporter gene that caused the developing mouse embryo to turn blue wherever the enhancer gene turned on. That sounds lovely. Embryos developing brains turn blue sooner and over a broader expanse if they carried the human version of the enhancer, Silver, Ray, and their colleagues reported online today in Current Biology. This was from yesterday. And you know, I was also thinking that for augmentation, for upgrading your future children with the injectable whatever to the base of the skull, that, you know, I mean, hey, let's mix in one of these genes with your newly created fetus in a petri dish and we can give them superhuman brains. They have found a smoking gun in the human genome that connects a regulatory element with a proposed pathway for increasing brain size, says Todd Pressis, a neuroanatomist, so he must study the anatomy of the neurological system at Yerkes National Primate Research Center in Atlanta, who is not involved with the work. But he, geneticist Evan Eicher of the University of Washington in Seattle, and others point out that there is much more to be done. Several researchers worry that more extensive studies are needed to nail down that the HER5 effects are not by chance. They'd like to see Silver and her colleagues replace the mouse HER5 with the human and the chimp HER5, a feat the Duke group has yet to succeed in doing. Even so, Eichler is pleased with just how much the Duke team has learned so far, and Ray says, given the growing ability of researchers to study enhancers and other DNA in mice, my guess is there are probably other stories like this in the works. Yes, and we should be so excited. All right, I'm looking to see, do we have anything that we can go out with from a good video perspective? And I might fail us, guys. I might just fail us. One second here. I thought there was one other story. I should always have my closer. Hey, by the way, it's Friday, so that means everyone should have a beer tonight. Plus, we just read a story. Actually, that's where we should go. Let's get there quick. They think that beer can stop Alzheimer's or at least be a preventative measure. And that should make everyone happy on a Friday. Hold on. I'm scrolling. Hopefully we don't run out of time. This was a study. Oh, I don't know. Maybe from a month or so ago. But here it is. Study finds beer compound to protect the brain and prevent Alzheimer's. February 5th. Recent research has given us at least one good reason to drink some brew. The new study has identified a compound in hops known as xanthohumol, or XN for short, which has been shown to improve cognitive function and help slow dementia. In other words, the scientists suggest that people who regularly drink beer might be better able to ward off the progression of neurological diseases. Well, considering that our environment is loaded with aluminum and particulates and all the other crap, and here we come, 30 seconds to go, then hops might be the way to go. And remember, yesterday, coffee actually fixes broken DNA. So coffee and beer, man, that's what I say. All right, guys, everyone have an awesome weekend. I will be around this weekend, and we will catch up with you on Monday. Make sure you stick around. It is Friday night. We have Josh on at 6 p.m., Truth on the Tracks, United Front Radio, and LaVon live at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. I don't quite hear my bumper, but maybe my clock is off, so that's okay. Yeah, actually, I got about 15 seconds. I think my notebook is off. Make sure, though, you stick around, because Friday is always a fun night, and Saturday is always some awesome radio, as well as Sunday. Actually, the weekends make your head hurt, because eating healthy is now a mental disorder.